Hey guys, Brock Cannon here. Welcome back to the podcast. This is episode number 31, and today I have the pleasure of sitting down with Robbie Law. Robbie is a longtime friend and someone that I've looked up to for about, 7 years now. And when it comes to learning how to really master your communication, I've been trying to get Robbie on the podcast for a while because he truly is the best of the best. He's trained thousands of people all around the world, entrepreneurs primarily, but he's also trained hundreds of speakers. And we all know how scary public speaking is. So this is a guy that truly was not born a public speaker. He was actually very shy and terrified of it himself, but really has learned how to master this skill and use it as an influence for good. So if you've ever wanted to just be more comfortable in front of a room talking, whether you're giving a eulogy at a funeral or at a wedding or a party, or you just want to be able to communicate better with your spouse or your kids and influence them for good and seek to have better mutual understanding so that you have less friction, you're going to get a lot of great advice in this episode. So very excited for everyone to listen to this. And without further ado, Robbie Law. Hey everyone, it's Brock Cannon again, and welcome back to another episode of the Brock Cannon Podcast, episode number 31 today. And I am so excited to have this guy on. I've been trying to get him on for a few weeks now, Mr. Robbie Law, my brother from my home state, Utah. And Robbie and I met, it's probably been like almost 7 years ago now, I want to say. And we met both working as consultants for a large real estate education company, although Robbie and I didn't cross paths that much. And then over the years, we've just gotten to know each other a little bit more. But what I've loved about Robbie is that he has really, really honed his skills in terms of not just being a great communicator, not just being a great public speaker, but he's literally now trained over 100,000 people face to face, and not just your average folks, but he's actually trained people to become better speakers, to become better communicators. And he's literally presented on everything from sales, health and wellness, fitness, coaching, personal development, you name it. And then, like, I don't know how this guy gets everything done. Like, he's flipped over 30 homes. He's been self-employed as his own entrepreneur. He's earned six figures in network marketing. He's been a speaker. He's been a coach. So without any further ado, Robbie.
It's always funny when someone's introducing you and giving all these details as if you're someone special. I really appreciate your accolades that you just tried to lay out for me, Brock. I you know, no pressure. Like, you tell them I'm a good communicator, so I hopefully communicate a good message with you here today. But thank you so much for letting me come on and get interviewed, dude. This makes me feel very, very special.
Well, it's good to have you on, man. So for people that are not familiar, and like I told you before we got on here, we have all kinds of listeners. We have entrepreneurs, we have just people that are in 9-to-5 jobs, we have stay-at-home moms, we have athletes, kind of all over the map with our listener base. So for people that don't know too much about you, maybe just give us a little bit of a backstory. You know, I obviously already mentioned you grew up in Utah like myself, but kind of take us to where you grew up to where you are now just a little bit.
Cool, man. I'll try and be brief, but so I grew up in Utah. I come from a sports family, played a lot of sports growing up. That was highly important to me. I was also, raised very, very religious family, had an awesome upbringing, great parents, great childhood. I really had nothing to complain about. I really, if I had anything to complain about, it was that it was just so good that I'm now looking at the life I'm giving my kids going, man, I wish I could provide as well as my dad did and do all the great things he did. But my dad kind of instilled on me the, you know, be around for your kids and be around for everything. And so that's kind of where I'm at in my life now. But before we got there, I kind of right out of high school started getting into computers. And then my uncle called me and asked me if I wanted to go travel and work on his crew, which I didn't really know what that meant at the time. But essentially it was a sales job and I was not a sales guy. I was not comfortable communicating with people. Although I grew up, you know, around a lot of people, I did tend to be the guy that wasn't as vocal until I felt very comfortable inside the group. And so I didn't really feel comfortable around a lot of people or in front of people or talking to people that I didn't know. And so I got fired after like 2 weeks, and it was my uncle's company. So I called him back and I'm like, dude, they fired me. He's like, well, let me work on it. So like, he got me my job back a week later. But you know that industry, Brock, if you get fired from that job, you must really suck, man. So I was terrible. And so I end up coming back out, and I met this really amazing guy named Andy Tanner. And he taught me that, he said, Robbie, if you can learn these skills, these communication skills, they're not sales skills. This is how you can become a better person. He said, if you work on communicating with the ballroom staff, if you work on communicating with the hotel staff and the hotel front desk people, and if you work on communicating with people when you sit on the airplane and do it in, intentionally, he said, you'll just become more and more fulfilled in your life. And not only that, if you learn that skill, it's a skill that no one can take from you. And it's a skill that will advance you in every area, your career, it'll advance you in your relationships, it'll advance you in just your joy in your journey, meaning like the journey of life. And from that point forward, I made it my conscious effort. I wanted to become a speaker. I wanted to be a great communicator. I wanted to be just like my buddy Andy, and be able to stand in front of a group of people with a lot of poise and power, and yet still do it with the intention to really help the people that were listening to me. And so I went ahead and did that for, the next 15 years, gave about, anywhere between 5,000 and 7,000 total public speeches, I think is where I would be at. Primarily I was doing it, working with entrepreneurs and helping them just want to make their lives better. In various ways. And so I started coaching along the way and started helping other speakers learn how to do it, because I figured if I could learn how to do it, anybody could, because I was terrified to get up on stage the first time. And so that's kind of brought me to where I am now. Now I work from home primarily, and I coach speakers mostly online, because I found that can be done very efficiently. And so I work with guys that way, and just people that want to have their voice heard and want to be able to kind of expand their reach so that their powerful message can be heard by more people. And I love to work with those types of individuals. So hopefully that wasn't too much, Brock, but that kind of brought you to today, man. So that's where I'm at. We have three boys. My wife's name is Annie. She owns a little CrossFit gym here in Linden, Utah. And so we like to work out a lot and just be a family, man. So there's me, man.
Yeah. So, and before we get into, the communication stuff further, for everyone listening, you got to look at Robbie and Annie. They're like the most ripped fit couple. but Robbie, you weren't always that way, right? So talk to us about that, because I remember, like, even in the time that I knew you, like, you were fit, but like, I looked at your picture with you and your wife a few years later, and it's like, oh my gosh, these guys are like, they're doing something right. And I know you got into supplements, and I think you were the original person that introduced me to Moringa powder. And, yeah. And you've made a lot of changes there. Talk to us about like what inspired that journey. And it's very, very cool that you guys have done that together.
Yeah, no, for sure. So first of all, thank you for remembering that I used to be a fatty. I appreciate that. I wasn't really. No, I've never really been like overweight. Like I said, I grew up in an athletic family, so I was always like doing athletics, but when you get out on the road and you got to travel, it's kind of hard to have a regiment. And so I early on had a desire to stay at least somewhat healthy and not let the road life of eating processed food and eating late at night and not planning my diet out and having intention with it. And, I wanted to kind of not have that. So I did my best to keep fairly in shape. But it wasn't until like 5 years ago where I was like, I started to really open up my mind and my eyes to what was out there and available for me. I stopped listening to the mainstream media about what I should be doing with my health. And I started listening to my body. I started listening to the people that were very successfully, making their life healthy, meaning they also had good habits that I could look at and go, man, they're doing something right. And I started looking at those things as opposed to just being sold on whatever idea was placed in front of me. And when that happened, we started looking just naturally to change our life around. And my wife, Annie, and we stumbled on Moringa 5 years ago, and I have not had I've had a couple of days, but I've not really missed a day drinking that powder in the morning because it always gives me a natural energy. I went away from energy drinks because I was pounding like those rock stars, dude, and all those things. And I was just like, and as much as it might have given me a short-term burst of energy, I was having long-term, you know, issues because of it, because it was really increasing the inflammation in my body. And yeah, I'd been through 5 knee surgeries. And so the inflammation was
5 knee surgeries.
Yeah. Five. Yeah.
Know that. My gosh. So,
yeah. And that was part of my issue with my weight is I was overweight, because I simply wasn't getting that active. So I was trying to be active, but I wasn't moving my body and getting an aerobic workout where my heart rate increased to a point where I was sweating, my metabolism was improved and all that. I was usually hitting the gym and working on vanity muscles and stuff. So when we switched over and we started going more natural, I started trying to get full mobility with my joints and my whole body straightened out. My knees felt better, you know, and I really have to attribute that to my wife because she took the journey with me, which has really been fun because she's lost some weight and then put it back on because she's gained muscle. Cause she is, like you said, she's like ripped. So she's still very petite, but, my wife really helped me on that journey because she's my trainer, which is like the most humbling thing ever, Brock, is to have your wife like your trainer. And so she helped me to kind of get my shoulder mobility back, my joint, my ankle mobility, my hip mobility. And those things have been very, very, I don't know, they've been helpful for just the overall, our overall day, because it doesn't hurt to get out of the car anymore. Except on days when you work out a lot and your body's sore, but but it's not like unnaturally painful all the time. So yeah, so my wife has really helped us on that journey.
Well, I think it's amazing, and I see how inspiring you guys are together, and what a gift. For people that aren't familiar, Robbie, because I always have to just realize not everyone has heard of all these supplements and superfoods. So just describe really, really quickly, what is Moringa?
So Moringa is the superfood. Like if there was a like heavyweight championship of the world, Moringa would win because it has 92 nutrients in Moringa. And I mean, it's got, I'm not an expert on it, man. I'm not going to sit here and claim I know all the details, but I've been around the plant enough now to go, it's replacing things in our diet like a multivitamin should, but it's coming naturally from a plant. It's a fruit, you know, and leaves and roots and like the husk of the fruit. And those are much more likely to participate with our body than a multivitamin that was made in a lab that has some ingredients that our body's going, well, that works, but it's not the same thing as what, you know, it would get from the ground. And so now our body has to try and figure out what to do with these foreign, you know, chemicals inside our body. And typically they end up hurting us somehow, you right. know? So I love it as a multivitamin because it's got all these nutrients and antioxidants and omega fatty acids and essential amino acids and all of it in the plant. And so I'm getting it in a natural way. And what it did for us is it just created a flow in my body where my inflammation seemed to just have a way to get out of my body better. So my knees wouldn't swell as much. My hips wouldn't swell as much. And so it was just kind of a natural solution that it's one of those things my wife and I just wonder if there's ever going to be a time where it's not part of our daily diet. Cause it just feels hard to think that it could ever be not part of my diet. You know,
where does this plant grow primarily?
So it grows, and like I said, I'm not an expert, but I do know it grows in like India at the base of the Himalayas. It grows in fact, you know, it grows everywhere. There's Moringa plants in Phoenix, Arizona. There's moringa plants all over. In fact, there's, I think, a bunch of different species of moringa, and the moringa oleifera is the one that I believe has the most nutritious value for us. But they have them in Africa, where they'll grow them in Africa in villages where you can't really produce a lot of food. So it's a way to supplement their food environment by getting them at least some additional nutrients. So it's a lot, it's kind of like a hemp plant in a way, in that hemp is used for, if you were to look at what it's capable of being used for, if we were to really look at those capabilities, hemp is so versatile. Well, moringa is the same way.
Yeah.
So it's got those same versatilities.
That's amazing. So walk us through, and it's so funny because sometimes these podcasts take turns, I want to talk about communication, but I'm so fascinated by how you do everything that you do. Three kids, if I read correctly, two dogs and three chickens as well.
Yes, sir. Those chickens need to be mentioned as part of our family because they feel like it, dude.
Absolutely. So walk us through, and maybe there's not a typical day, but walk us through kind of a typical day in your life from what do you take in the morning supplement wise, you know,
What
are you doing throughout your day?
Well, and I think this is a great transition into communication, Brock, because that's what I do every day is I'm looking to communicate with myself first. I look to me to communicate with myself the moment I wake up. I try to spend 5 minutes each morning with a short meditation. It's an app that I have on my phone called Centered, and it's a 4-minute mini meditation. And I try to do it each morning to try and get myself kind of focused right. I usually, in the morning, my wife and I have our moringa drinks. It's a powder, so we just have it out the night before, and we kind of, it's kind of fun because I make it for her, she makes it for me, and it's always a fun, like, gift that we give each other of health. At least that's the way we look at it. We're totally weird. But anyway, we get our drink, I get my drink, and then I go and work out. I work out at 6, I work from 6 to 7, and we do kickboxing and CrossFit in our gym. And so that's my day starting. Once I do that, you know, I get my kids off to school, and then I go right into spending time on me, which is I write in my gratitude journal. I usually spend at least 30 minutes a day, sometimes more like an hour, just writing in my journal. And what I do is I write about my previous day. I write about what I communicated well with myself, how I communicated, what I was grateful for about myself, what I was grateful for about others in my life, including my family and friends, and I'll write some notes, and then I'll plan out my day in my gratitude journal. I like that because it helps me measure how well I'm staying on target for my day. I like to have a balanced day, meaning I don't want to always just be working, but I do want to schedule some time for work. So I'll put in a few ideas of what I want to get done that day. And usually I'll have five or six things that I want to do. Like, for example, I'll write in that I want to breathe whenever I feel anxious. I'm going to focus on my breathing. And so that's a communication with myself where now I'm looking inside and saying, let's focus on our breathing because you're feeling anxious. And I'll do it multiple times through the day. But because I write it down in the morning, I kind of have it as a nice anchor, and then I can go read it the next day and go, did you do what you said you set out to do yesterday? And so I have 5 or 6 things I'll write down for the day, and that really helps me communicate with my future of this is what's going to happen today. And as I do that, I found that I can really plan out and be intentional with who I'm communicating with. So I'll put in there certain things like when I get home, this is how I'm going to, when I get home, spend one-on-one time with Lucas, make sure Brady has his homework done, make sure you spend time with Parker throwing the baseball. And I'll write that in my journal so that when I get home, I'm well-intentioned and I'm spending that time wisely. So, so my day is usually spent, that's how I spend the morning, is planning out the rest of my day. And usually I'm done by 10 o'clock or 10:30 or whatever. And that's when I just go into watching videos of speakers and reviewing speeches. I work for a couple companies right now that have a company that has a lot of speakers. And so I'll go through a lot of their video and I'll just kind of look at how they're communicating with their audience. And then I'll just give them some ideas on how to work some more method and presentation skills into their speaking process. And I'll spend most of my day kind of going through videos, having coaching calls, and working with speakers. And that's kind of like the majority of my day. When I get home, I want to spend time with my kids, so I try to shut everything off. I do like my social media life, so I schedule 20 minutes of Facebook in the morning, 20 minutes in the afternoon, and 20 minutes in the evening, so I can spend an hour on Facebook, but I'm really intentional about it, because I like to create the environment around me, and I love my Facebook environment, dude. Like, I seriously get so much value out of my followers, not my followers, but the people that are on my wall. You know, will ask a good question, and I'll get great value, so I'm always looking to learn and grow, and that's kind of like how I spend my day, man, and try to be as intentional as I can. Hopefully that's not too much once again, dude.
Oh no, it's perfect. And now I have a million things I want to ask you about, but let me go back to the first thought that I had. So I think this is amazing, and it's almost like a football coach taking the tape from the game. They're watching the tape over and over to see how they're improving, but yet you're doing this with public speakers. And so I know not everyone listening would really consider themselves a public speaker. Maybe there's a couple out there, but I would say most of us at one time in our life are going to have to stand up in front of a group of people, whether at a funeral, whether in church, whether, you know, we're at a family gathering, and deliver a quote unquote public speech. So for the people that just want one or two ideas, and you've seen everything at this point. So people that are just wanting one or two ideas on how to improve speaking in public, what would be just two or three things maybe that you would tell them to do? Very, very simple stuff.
Well, there's a few things that are like really simple. First and foremost is when we're getting up to speak, the first 60 seconds are the easiest for us to prepare for, because that's what's happening first. So have your first 60 seconds dialed in so you know how you're going to start. And that means practicing it, doing it in the mirror, getting that first 60 seconds. And then once you've done that first 60 seconds, I've noticed when people get that part done right, the rest of their meeting, their speech and everything else tends to go a lot better, because the moment they can feel comfortable and they get to that feeling of comfortability on stage, most people get right into their topic, because there's a reason they're asked to be a speaker. They know the topic that they're being asked to speak about. So if they can get to that moment, then that'd be my first thing. So get your first 60 seconds dialed in. I have a literal outline that I use every single time. It's exactly the same. It doesn't look that way, but I'm accomplishing a lot with my first 60 seconds, because I know that that's the most important part. So that would be one thing. And then the second thing, and this is just sounds so dumb, but very few people know how to end their speech. They don't know what to do to finish. So plan your ending as well. Know what you're going to do to end, so there's not that awkward moment for every single one of us where we're sitting there going, wait, are they done? Should we be clapping? Should we stand up? Like, what should we do? You know, but we've all experienced that. And if you can solve that for your audience as a public speaker, have a slide, have a catchphrase, have a whatever it is that you know is the ending, so that we as the audience don't have to experience that awkwardness.
Okay, I like that. So clarity around that. And what else? What are maybe just a couple other obvious things, either with, you know, how they're going to stand, how they're going to position their body. And then maybe you could tell us about like some of the biggest mistakes people make, because that's probably.
I'll say the biggest mistake people make on stage is people try to look too big. So they try to build their own credibility on stage. And when people try to look or act too big, perfection never rings true, you know? And so it's best, in my opinion, to not take the stage as someone who's like the expert of everything, but be the student of what you're talking about that's been a student for long enough that you've got experience worth listening to. Mm-hmm. Because when people try to be really experts on things, they're trying to build credibility by being the best at something. And yeah, it just typically doesn't go off as well as you would think and as the speaker thinks. So understand how to build credibility. My favorite way to build credibility, Brock, and maybe this is going to be too advanced, but I just use two numbers and a result. It's a really simple way to get credibility and stop talking about yourself. And basically, it kind of goes like this. It's, hi, my name's Robbie. In the last 10 years, I flipped 30 houses. In that time, that taught me how important it is to have education and systems. So I have two numbers. 10 years and 30 properties. And those two numbers, they occupy the logical brain. And so the logical brain is strung up on those two numbers. So my result that I say next is typically accepted at a subconscious level. So they're just accepting the results. So if you want to test this theory, dude, if you go to Tony Robbins' website, go to his about page, look at his bio, and I guarantee you he uses two numbers followed by a result to start his bio. Every public speaker that really knows credibility knows that they don't have to try and build themselves up. Hi, I'm Tony Robbins. Over the last, 30 years, I've trained a million people. And in that time, I've taught entrepreneurs how to take their life to the next level. So his result in that, what I just said, would be taught entrepreneurs to take their life to the next level. Well, that statement that he makes right there is actually a presupposition. It's not a fact is what I'm saying. It's basically someone's opinion, but because you put the two numbers there, the result is just accepted. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
So I teach people to do that and just use it early on. And just the moment they've done that, they stop talking about themselves and then get right into your topic because the audience wants to hear how they can improve. They don't want to hear about you the whole time.
Right. Exactly. It is coming down to what's in it for them, right?
Yep.
Always. Okay. So that's fantastic. So what are some other big mistakes that people make? We've all seen speakers or presenters that are pacing very, very anxiously, which makes you start to sweat because you're nervous for them.
Yeah. I mean, if you were to say bare bones basic, usually the guys I'm working with, a lot of them have been speaking for 30 years, so we're not working on something like, hey, man, you got to stop rocking back and forth. But inside my opening 60-second outline, one of the first things it says is stand there and plant your feet on the ground. Because when you plant your feet on the ground, you're anchoring yourself to that stage. If you're rocking back and forth, that just shows us that you're just like, the wind is blowing you back and forth, which means you've got no roots to what you're talking about. So the pacing back and forth, I had a speech this week in San Diego, in fact, where I didn't really know where to go at one point. And you know what I was doing? I was pacing. I was pacing from left to right because I didn't know exactly what my next slide was. So I fall victim to the same idea of just pacing back and forth. Plant your feet. I always, when I stood on stage, this is literally how I thought of it. And this is going to sound super corny, but you remember the Care Bears back in the day, dude?
I sure do.
Care Bears care a lot, dude. I would literally stand on stage. I had a visual in my head of me standing there like a Care Bear with a big heart, and I was shoving it into my audience. Like I was like, take this heart. I was like, Care Bear stare. So I was giving them that Care Bear care a lot because I was opening my chest up. Because as much as we are starting to learn about neuroscience, we're also starting to learn that our heart actually has an electromagnetic field. Because of that, we actually can extend that electromagnetic field towards our crowd. And I firmly believe that because I've felt it on stage 5,000 plus times, man. You can literally help your audience feel your heart if you're that intentional.
It's so true. That's very, very true. And I 100% believe in that as well. I want to shift gears just a little because I know there's probably people out there thinking, well, this is awesome, but I don't stand up for presentations that much. But we're also in an age now where video content is almost more common. And you mentioned yourself, you're probably training a lot of your speakers over video as well. And for yes. someone that just wants to start getting a message out or maybe share their story a little bit, maybe they're not looking to make tons of money or become a six-figure life coach, but they just want to share some stuff either on Instagram through a video or Facebook doing a live or whatever. Like what very practical advice would you give to someone that's terrified of making their first few videos to share their story, but wants to do it? What advice would you give to that person?
Oh, Brock, you're asking me this question, dude. See, if I can be completely authentic with you, I went from player to coach in communication, meaning that I spent the majority of my time as the player. I was the speaker. I was up on stage. And when I went to coach, that transition has been challenging because, I mean, imagine Kobe Bryant were to step off the court right after he finished his game and then go coach the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
You know, he's got no experience as a coach yet. I mean, there's a transition period, but there's also this period where you're earning credibility, where you're earning the fact that you should be a coach. And, you know, I believe that I've earned that now, but putting my own content out, you're asking me to answer my own problem right now. Because sometimes I think, gosh, is what I'm saying going to be valuable for other people? And I start to doubt my own message. And, you know, that's something that I personally have been battling and battling these last probably about 2 years of believing that what I have to share with other people is valuable enough. But here's something that my mentor taught me, and it was really brought to my attention this last week. I had somebody chew me out. They said, Robbie, you've got to do more. You've got to get more confident. You've got to do more. And my mentor taught me this. And he said, if you ever have something that can help someone, you're morally and ethically obligated to do anything you can to put it in their hands. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought of that in terms of products because I've sold so many products. I've sold millions and millions and millions of dollars of products. But when the product is knowledge and how to communicate better, man, that for me is a product that I should be very, very willing to put out there. So to answer your question after 17 minutes of monologuing, to answer your question, people need to put content out if they have a desire to have their voice heard because they feel their voice is worth hearing, they're going to put content out. And until people believe in their own voice, that content is going to be stuck inside their brain. Yes. And I'm really sick of my content being stuck inside my brain, Brock, because you know how I use this stuff the most? The public speaking knowledge that I got, the number one way that I use it is when I'm working with my kids. One way. I use the exact same strategies, the exact same techniques because they work. And I can do it authentically. I'm trying to help my kids learn life goals. And what's the best way to do it? The same exact way that I would try to help someone learn a life goal over a 20-minute TED Talk. The same way I would try to help someone learn a life goal over a 2-hour presentation. You know, the same type of thing that I would try to do for anyone giving a public speech. Because what's the point of the public speech? Hey, I'm trying to help you. Well, what is my point in being a dad? Hey, I'm trying to help you, man. Life's nuts. Let me give you some ideas. So I teach my kids the main concepts of being a good speaker because being a good public speaker is nothing more than being a good person, just like my mentor Andy taught me.
Mm. So for someone that wants to just, like you said, that's a perfect transition because I was just going to ask you this. For someone that just wants to, communication is, of course, one of the hugest problems in relationships. It's just, you know, we get in these patterns of misunderstanding and then it escalates and turns into all sorts of disastrous stuff for people. So for people that just want to simply communicate better in their relationship with their significant other or with their kids or with their mom or their dad who they continue to have miscommunications with, what are just a few things that you typically try to implement?
Good question, man. So I had a communications course in college, and the one thing I remember is he taught me the definition of communication was the production of shared meaning. The production of shared meaning. I had no idea what it meant back then, and I think I'm starting to learn what that means more as I communicate with my wife. If I can find a way to share meaning with her, we don't have to have the exact same beliefs, but if I can see where she's coming from and I can look at her with that level of understanding, then we're going to be able to communicate better. So one of the main things that I use, and this is one of the main elements of public speaking, is I look at things based on rapport. And rapport basically means connection. My favorite definition of rapport is I'm with you. But rapport has a few key components of connection that we can utilize as a public speaker or as a communicator to help make that connection stronger. And one of those things is commonality. So commonality is one of the key elements of rapport, but it's also an element that we can utilize. So when I'm talking to my kids, I'm trying to find things that are common between both of us that we can talk about. When I'm talking to my crowd, I'm trying to be like them. I'm trying to be with them. I'm not trying to be above them. I'm not trying to be more than them. And that's brings us back to that number one mistake people make is they try to be more than their crowd when you can't be. You're never going to be more than another human being. We're all equals. You've got your talents. I've got mine. So as much as you want to try to be more than somebody, you're going to come across as arrogant on stage to somebody. So you want to be with your crowd. That's how it is with my wife. I use commonality as much as I can with my wife. I try and find ways where I can, where we can be in common with each other on ideas so that we are more connected. So commonality is literally one of my most used elements through my day. When I'm talking to another person, I'm trying to find ways to be in common with them. If I hear them say they love to play the guitar, I channel that inside my head. I keep listening. And when there is an open opportunity for me to say, you play guitar, what do you love to play? Because I play the guitar too. And now I can have a much better connection with that person because I channeled it. So I use commonality often. I try to find ways to be common.
So, but here's the question I have. So I think that's a great example. And first, you know, to find things that are in common, but let's say, you know, obviously you're with your wife because you do have things in common, but are there times, and I would assume they are because we're all human, where you guys are in disagreement? You're not seeing eye to eye on something. You're trying to move forward. You have the vision of wanting to, as we do as men, solve it. You want to move through it. You want to make it right. So in that type of situation, I don't know if you can think of an example, even if it's a silly one, but where you're not seeing eye to eye, but then you're somehow implementing commonality into that situation to move forward. Can you give us any examples? And feel free to take a minute if you need to think about that.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've heard feel, felt, found before. That's kind of like a sales thing. I know how you feel. I felt the same way before. This is what I found, right? I try and stop at feel, felt with my spouse because if I go to the found part, then I'm trying to give her advice. So when I'm working with my wife, and in all honesty, one thing that is maybe hidden from the world is what happens behind closed doors. And my wife and I are very public about the love that we have for each other. But we try to be as public about the fact that we fight like cats and dogs sometimes. And so when I get to a point where I can tell that first of all, there's a great book called Crucial Conversations that changed my look at each and every word that I say. I started looking at each conversation that I had and said, okay, this conversation with my wife may not be about what I think it's about, but it's important to her. And because it's important, I'm going to make sure that she is prepared for this conversation. So that's a different concept that I'm using right there. But so when we're in the middle of a conversation and it gets to that heated level, my very first thought is, okay, how can I prepare the soil so that it is much more ready for what I'm going to say? And the very best way that I found to do that is to just listen and to say, I know how you feel. And I know that I felt the same way too. And I just apologize that she feels the way that she does. That to me is finding common ground. Because I know that at some point I want to give advice on how, where she should go, or I want to interject, but I'm finding common ground. So that would be one example, at least a quick one that I could try and come up with.
Okay. Fantastic. So that book is Crucial Conversations. And that, in fact, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to ask you if there was a book that was very influential for you.
Yeah, dude, I'm such a bookworm though, Brock. I've got like 200 to 300 personal development books on my mind. So and that's really in my audiobooks alone. I think I have about 200 audiobooks, and they're all personal development related. So you'd get a lot, but based on the relationships and building strong foundations in each important relationship, Crucial Conversations was definitely a highlight for me.
Okay, fantastic. I will make sure we link that up in the show notes. Fantastic. I wanted to go back to one other thing that you said, and this has come up a few times with different guests I've had on the podcast, is the amount of time that they actually spend in the morning creating an intentional day, creating a conscious day, to where it's not reactive, it's not based on just the demands of other people, but it's truly an intentional day. So I love what you said about your planning. And I mean, you're literally journaling for 30 minutes to an hour. Talk to us just a little bit more about what that practice does for you. And secondly, you know, if it wasn't always like that, what kind of inspired you to start doing that?
Dude, this, it's so funny because this has been on my mind so often recently, because this journaling has changed my life, man. Like, I've got a really great business partner named Nate Harris. He's the one that flipped most of those houses. So when you say I flipped 30 houses, I just kind of want to go, man, I just had a really good business partner, because Nate is so epic. And he's my accountability partner on this. And we started journaling back and forth a couple of years ago, where we would send each other our journal, either, hey, I got it done, or here's the journal, or something. And then it just started to transition. So for me, I had a speaker ask me a year and a half ago, he said, what is the number one way you can help me as a speaker? And I thought about that and I said, okay, this is how. One of the most kind things we can do to somebody else is listen to them. I said, you got a crowd of people. Here's how you can be a better speaker. Stand up there and be grateful that you have an audience of people ready to listen to you. Find gratitude in that opportunity. And gratitude has just changed my life, man. Like, it's, I've always been a very grateful person, but the last 2 years I started journaling gratitude every day. So I'm writing multiple things about myself, multiple things about my family. And I had an accountability partner, Nate, that, kind of kept me on target, because it was hard at first to slow down that much. But our brain really can't go anywhere if we stop and start writing. It has to stick with us. And so it's such a great way to get my brain to do what I want it to do, because it wants to go everywhere. And someone with ADD sitting down doing this freaking journaling, it has been a challenge, man. It's not been easy. But now I've got a really good system. I've got a really good process. And every single day through my day, I am sitting here going, man, I am just creating exactly and doing exactly what I said I was going to do this morning. So I feel like I'm cheering myself on. I'm like, keep doing it, Rob. You're doing what you said you were going to do. So all those doubts and fears that you have that you can't get it done, you can start squashing them, because you can start to celebrate the little things that you're doing well through your day. And gosh, Brock, I just can't tell you how much it's just changed who I am. I walk around with such a smile. My day is happy. You know, I had somebody tell me the other day, it's like, man, your Facebook, it's like all this happy stuff. When are you going to post this? I'm like, dude, I don't have any bad stuff to post, man. Life is hard. Kids are hard. Finances have been hard. You know, we've had all sorts of issues in our life. But man, there's so much to be grateful for, because I know I'm going right back to my gratitude journal the next morning. And if I can't think of things that I was grateful for that day, then my day sucks. If I have to sit there in the morning trying to go, what am I grateful for from yesterday? Then my day was just not intentional. And I don't have to do that very often anymore, because I can find gratitude in the smallest little details. So that process, I would highly recommend it to anyone, to find not a morning time or a my time, find your time when you can consistently start to write down what you want your days to look like.
That's so beautiful. And I couldn't agree more. I mean, gratitude is absolutely one of the most grounding principles that I've ever had in my life. I got to tell you this very, very, very brief story, Robbie. I remember years ago, when I was racing as a pro cyclist, I was out on a ride with my good friend Jeremy, and we were in Salt Lake, and our legs were just tired that day. We had had exhausting training weeks, and for whatever reason, we were just kind of bitching to each other on this ride. And as we were going along, all of a sudden, we see this guy on the sidewalk with no legs in a wheelchair, having a little bit of a hard time on the sidewalk over a little bump or something like that. And then he made it over the bump, and I barely noticed it. And as I was mid-sentence complaining about how tired my legs were, my friend Jeremy just turns to me and he says, "Hey man, at least we got legs." And it just shut me up. Yeah. It just shut me up. And I'll never forget that moment, because it just shows, like, there is always someone that has it worse than us. No matter how bad we may think we have it, there's always someone that has it worse than us. And we have so much to be grateful for. So
yeah,
I love that you do that, man. I want to ask you too, because I think about, you know, you said sometimes for your day, you might just set an intention of 4, 5, 6 major things that you want to do. You know, we've heard Tim Ferriss has talked about, he just set 3 intentions for the day. And if he can only do those 3 things, it's a good day. How do you feel like people sometimes cripple themselves by creating these massive to-do lists that really are not getting them closer to what they want, but they're just keeping them busy? Tell us a little bit about your philosophy with that, and how you create those strong intentions that are actual meaning intention.
Yeah, you know, goals, I mean, this is no different than setting goals on a daily basis. And so you've got to be realistic with yourself and realize, as human beings, we're going to just have those shitty days, man. We're going to have those struggles. And so when we have those, it's really important that we just are having something that is going our way that we can kind of pinpoint. And so when I'm doing, I'll just read you what I wrote in mine this morning. So I have a section that says, "I can." And that just talks in that section. I'm just writing down what I can be. I'm not writing down what, expectation I have of myself. I'm saying this is what I can be. I wrote, I can be Kula. Kula is the name of my business. It's Kula is a Sanskrit word for community of the heart. And I also like the, it's an acronym in, this is the way I think of it. It's kindness, understanding, leadership, and awareness. And that to me are really the 4 main things that I'm trying to go for on a daily basis, is to be kind, to be understanding, to be a vocal leader, and to be aware of things, meaning aware of myself, aware of others, and all of that. So my second thing, I said that I can listen hard. What I mean is I'm going to be a good listener. I can love with everything. I can be more than yesterday. I can forget the struggle and be grateful. So those are the things that I'm going to be focused on for my day. So it's not like I'm going in and saying, you're going to have to sell 2 people at this amount and make this much money for your family, because those things come as a byproduct of me focusing on listening, loving, being more than I was, forgetting the struggle, and focusing on being grateful. Those things come as a byproduct. So all of the things that I need to do financially, they'll come into play because of what I've design my day to look like, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Very, very true. So with looking back now, and I kind of want to, there's a couple last questions here, but I think everybody, like you said, they resonate not just with the expertise that the person in front of them may have, but they also really resonate with the struggle. So looking back in your life, maybe over just the last decade, where was one of your biggest struggle points, and And if you don't mind sharing a little bit about that, and then tell us just kind of how you worked through that. I think that's always inspiring.
Yeah, that's easy. 10 years ago, 10 and a half years ago, it'll be 11 years on January 26th, was the last day I used opiates. I fell into that addiction for a lot of years. I mentioned the knee surgeries and stuff, that kind of was part of that process. And that journey of as many rock bottom moments as I can think of, and really not channeling my best life for a very long period of time while I was doing it, that was my struggle that I look at now. And I think when we go through things like that, I think we go through them for two reasons. We do it for the first, I think, for the benefit of others. And then second, for the benefit of our own personal development. And you get to choose if you're going to use that second one, because when we go through things, other people benefit because they watch us and they go, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to hurt my family. I don't want to be addicted. I don't want to throw money away. I don't want to have all of that. So we're benefiting them when we are going through our struggle. And then we can really benefit them when we go through our struggle and we get the personal development and we get to grow from it, because then we get to go to people in the struggle and say, listen, I was there, man. But Robbie Law is 11 fucking years clean, bro. And it feels so good, man. Sorry for the effort. I know two F-words give you an explicit rating, but it felt right. It felt right, man. I'm very proud to be over that part of my life. And I can proudly say that I've helped a lot of people feel the confidence that they can get through their addiction too. And so that was not easy, but I am grateful for my journey and grateful for the people that stuck with me, especially my wife, Annie, who is just an absolute rock through the whole thing, was supportive, but also stern and set boundaries, helped me through it, helped me stay accountable, tested me, continues to test me if she feels like I'm being a weirdo, you know, and I am okay with that because we have a pact as a couple that we are going to be away from that for the rest of, I have this pact with her that I'm done with that, you know? And so I'm cool if she wants to test me, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's so beautiful. And thank you for sharing that. I think, you know, maybe we even have you back on the show to talk about that. Cause I think it's a problem that not a lot of people are talking enough about. And I know there's so many sufferers and I know firsthand as you know, been in business now a while in the CBD business, you know, there's people literally coming to me every day like, hey, CBD is helping me to get off of some of these harder things from my pain.
Absolutely.
And it's rewarding and it's really cool. So, you know, I love though, what I was going to say is I love how you've now used that painful, painful experience as this anchor of what you don't want and also to help you push closer to what you do want. And I think we all can use painful experiences like that. And I'm seeking to do the same with the mistakes in my life. So I think that's beautiful, man.
Well, thank you, dude. I'm excited to be past it. And I'm excited to let it be kind of a guiding light for others that you can do it and you can get through it.
Absolutely, man. Well, this has been phenomenal, Robbie. I'm excited to go back and listen to this. And I'm going to, there's so much in here. And I hope recognize the gift that this episode is going to be. And I truly think there's going to be something that really resonates with everybody in this episode. And I'm excited to get this out there. So,
man, thank you so much for having me. Seriously. I hope there was some value provided. And dude, if there is another desire to talk to me again, you know, I love to talk. It's very clear based on this episode. And I would love to share more, man. Anytime I can get together, Brock. I'm very grateful for you. You've been around for a short time in my life, but the impactful times that we've had together, I swear every time I've met you, I've never forgot that experience, because every time we've met up, because we usually have great conversation. We usually have, and you know, you tend to carry a light around with you. You've got this light in your eyes when you're talking to people that you can just tell you care about others. So thank you for letting me come on, man.
The feeling is mutual, my friend. Well, thank you so much, Robbie. And thank you guys for listening. And we will see you all on the next episode. Hey guys, Brock here. Did you enjoy that episode as much as I did? What a versatile episode. I think one of my favorite parts was just seeking to understand the other person, like Robbie was explaining. And I think that when we truly put ourselves in another person's shoes, it goes a long way. Very common practice that is not so common. So if we could do that, I think that's an amazing step to being better communicators. So much in this episode. I know I got a ton out of it. I hope you did as well. If you guys are enjoying these episodes, please feel free to share them with your friends and also rank us and rate us on the different platforms like Apple and Spotify, etc. So thanks so much again for tuning in, and we'll see you guys on the next episode.